you. Roll call of members.
Ms. Chock?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson has asked to be excused. Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Stein?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
12 members present.
Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'd like to ask for an executive session after tonight's meeting to talk about personnel issues and litigation. Privilege of the floor for the public. It's our time when we hear from the public, and I've got folks signed up. If there's anybody who hasn't signed up, then after the first folks, you can come to the front. We have a three-minute time limit for everyone. So the first is Jeff Lyden, and then Olin Mack. Jeff?
Thank you very much. My name is Jeff Lyden. I'm the Executive Director of the Community Dispute Resolution Center. CDRC's mission is to cultivate constructive responses to conflict. We have been headquartered in Ithaca since 1983, serving Tompkins, Chemung, and Schuyler counties, and I just want to spend a few minutes telling you about our work, since you have supported it for years. As a nonprofit partner with the New York Unified Court System, we provide state-mandated mediation services, and our work in youth programming also keeps us very active in the conflict education field. We generally make our mediation services available to everyone at no charge, and we make the process as convenient as possible, and we ensure confidentiality. Our mediation services deal with a lot of conflicts, and they've included custody and visitation, placement, neighbors in dispute, lemon law cases, agricultural cases, workplace disputes, small claims court, special education, elder care conflicts, disputes between teens and their parents, bullying cases in schools. I think just about anything you can imagine. And because it seems to me conflict is such a natural part of life, it also seems to me like everyone needs our services at some point or another. And thanks in large part to your support over the years, CDRC has served 60,000 people in conflict. We've mediated 10,000 cases, trained 2,500 people in mediation, and taught 2,000 children how to better cope with conflict. Now, one of the reasons the state mandates our services isn't only because we can prevent community violence, and it's not only because we can serve families in deep crisis by helping them achieve resolution. It is also because Albany knows that we save the taxpayers money. They know that we can mediate cases, at least many kinds of cases, for less than courts can adjudicate them, and courts know that we can help control their dockets. Now, more importantly to us, we've learned that mediation can be an incredibly empowering process where people can independently achieve meaningful resolution without intrusive, expensive, and institutional intervention. Something else worthy of note, Albany sees our CDRC program as a model program. In a recent survey comparing other similarly funded upstate mediation centers covering 15 counties and 2 million New Yorkers, we ranked first in all six metrics measured. And I think my staff and mediators have a lot to be proud of for making us a leader in the field. I'll end on that high note. Thank you very much for your time and your support. I've left materials for all of you. If you want to learn more with my contact information, feel free to get in touch or make a referral. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Olin Mack.
Hello, my name is Olin Mack. I'm the executive director of the Southside Community Center. And I came up here for a few reasons today. Number one, to say thank you to the legislature. I've been on the director of the Southside for the past 5 years, and the county has helped it and assisted the center in funding for four of those last 5 years, so I'm sincerely appreciative of that. Over the last 4 years, the center has grown. The center has become more active. And the center has become a hub once again for the community, so I'm appreciative to you guys for that, because without you, that wouldn't be possible. I'd like to welcome and invite all of you to come to the center. It's at 305 South Plain. At any point in time, you're welcome to come. If you need a tour and you want to call me beforehand, please feel free to do that. And please look on the Human Service listserv for a bunch of the activities that we have going on in the center. And I just want to run down a list of some of the activities that we've had going on for the past year. I'll start with some of our bigger events, our cultural events. We had a Kwanzaa celebration during the week between Christmas and New Year's in 2009. We hadn't done it in a couple of years, and we were able to get about 60 community members to come out in youth, and it was a really, really fun event. We're looking forward to 2010 being even better than that. We had a Juneteenth celebration the past, I believe it was June 19th this year. We had about 300 participants come out, learn about Juneteenth. Vendors were there. We had some youth performers there. It was really, really a blessing to the community and to the center. So those are our two biggest cultural events. We have a number of youth events that go on during the year. We have a music studio there, and we have young people there learning how to do digital recording, recording music, making CDs, making beats and things of nature. We have a computer lab with 10 PCs in it, and kids get on and do anything from Facebook to MySpace to Research College to term papers and things of that nature. We have a kitchen. We're going to start in the fall a hot food program so that the youth in the neighborhood are going to be able to eat. We hope to serve at least 30 youth per day with a hot food program. We do a pet clinic twice a month where the community can bring their pets in and get seen. We do a food pantry, and we service 30 to 40 families twice a month in the center. We have a senior shopping program. We shop for seniors throughout the whole county. So we do a lot of different things, but I just wanted to take a minute to, one, invite you guys there, two, let you guys know some of the services that we provide, and that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Olin. If there's anybody else who'd like to address the legislature, going up to the mic and just give us your name and where you live.
Hi, I'm Krista Bissell. I live at 137 Pine Tree Road, a 26-year resident of the Pine Tree Road residential area. I'm here basically to mention that the plan that is being proposed for our area, which is a bike and pedestrian path going from the PNC out to 366, but which also incorporates the bridge, the overpass that's there, and heightening this bridge for larger truck traffic to travel along our road. I want to say that this will negatively impact our residential area, which is a very strong residential area and has been for years. I also want to point out that there are some things that we found that are actually inaccurate in both some of the county and the town records. One of the things we found in the county records said that there would be no controversy for this proposal. And that's true because no one ever told us that this was happening. So if no one tells the residents that something's happening, there probably won't be controversy. The other is that in the town neighborhood focus group meeting, which once again I don't think any of us knew about, it says that Pine Tree Road is mostly grad students, and that's definitely not the case. Out of the 49 homes that are in our residential district, there are about three that are not owner-occupied. So, and the average occupancy is 19 years for the residents that live there. So I would like to stress that we need to find a way that this will not harm the residents of our district. Thank you.
Thank you, Krista. Anyone else? All right, thank you. Legislator privilege of the floor, and I believe Will Burbank is first up.
I'd like to invite Marley Bialke and Wendy Skinner to come up here, please. Welcome. So we have a very good distinguished youth awardee tonight. Her name is Marley Bialke. Did I correctly pronounce your name? I'm sorry. And Marley has been working with Wendy through Project So Green. And many of you may know Wendy through her former life as our public information officer right here. But she's gone on to do a really, really innovative project. And my understanding is that Marley has played a very important role as a volunteer this summer. And I'm going to invite Wendy to say a few words about what the project is and what Marley's been doing.
Thanks, Will. I appreciate it. I've sat through several of these presentations, and I think that sometimes a kid doesn't have to run into a burning house and rescue someone in order to distinguish themselves. And Marley's that kind of kid, although I believe she would do that, given the circumstances. I nominated Marley for this award more for who she is than what she's done in her young life. She's been part of So Green's Summer Youth Program. We have a six-week program for teenagers from all different kinds of backgrounds. It's very intensive. It's 5 hours a day for 4 afternoons a week. They have a lot of requirements that they have to meet, one of which is to have a lot of fun, be creative. But I think it was the second day that I realized that Marley was someone who really, really stood apart. She's just the kind of person that when she walks in the room, you feel like everything's going to be okay. She's reliable. She's trustworthy. She's caring. She's helpful. And she may be surprised to hear me say this, but she has a kind of quiet confidence and acceptance of others that I think helps enhance the self-esteem of her peers. I think being around Marley helps other kids feel good about themselves. So I'm very proud to have nominated her for this award, and I hope that I know you for a long time to come. So congratulations. Want to say a few words?
I'll just say thank you. Well, I was incredibly surprised that you nominated me for it, but I'm grateful because this is one of my best summers ever, and I had so much fun, and I learned so much. It was really great.
So this is the last week of our program, and I wanted to invite you all to the showcase that's going to include some remarkable designs, fashions that Marley has accomplished, and other things that the girls have done, including entire lines of summer dresses and an 8-foot giant squid. So these are the invitations. Don't fight over them. I'm sorry, there's only one each for the legislators. And this is a little brochure about So Green to just let you know what we've been up to for the past 2 years. So thanks again.
Thank you.
And we have a plaque. I'll read it to you. It's Thompson County Distinguished Youth Award presented to Marley Bialke, and it's recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, August 2010. And we have sponsorship for this program through Bangs Ambulance, Tompkins County Legislature, the Hugo Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, and A&B Wards Engraving. So there's a plaque.
Thank you.
And we also have some goodies, which I think may involve an ice cream, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank
you very much, Wendy. Thank you, Marley.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Will. And if I can editorialize for a minute, So Green is an amazing, one of those amazing things that sort of sprang out of Wendy's creativity and interest in sustainability. And they keep moving to bigger locations. And I think now they're on Cougar Street. So if you, if anybody's interested in sewing or donating, you know, donating fabric or thread or notions that you have. They will take them and make really good use of them. Thank you, Will. Any other legislators for privilege of the floor? Pam.
Yes, I wanted to let my colleagues know that on Thursday,
From 9:30 to 10:30 on August 26th, Barbara Lifton and I are having a sort of news conference where we are celebrating the 65th anniversary of women's suffrage. And we are going to list all of the women elected officials in Tompkins County. If you can come, it would be wonderful. And we just felt that it was important for us to acknowledge this very, very important anniversary for all the women in our country. So that's Thursday, August 26th, from 9:30 to 10:30 at the Bernie Milton Pavilion on the Commons. And I just actually went through the Tompkins County Directory, and from my calculations, there are 42 women who are elected officials in Tompkins County. And I don't know what that percentage is, but it sure seems like a higher percentage than the number of women who are in the New York State Senate, which is at about 16%. And so anyway, that's part of the motivation here. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Carol.
Yeah, I attended an all-day session on a program called Frack Tracker on our behalf that it turned out to be a really fascinating geographic information system that is accessible to all of us online that has been set up through a grant by the Heinz Endowment at the University of Pittsburgh. And essentially what it is a map and the ability to put any kind of data, to take a data set or points of data and enter that data onto the map and then to pull up geographical representations of, now they happen to be using it related to hydrofracking, and the data that are in there have to do with Pennsylvania points, but the map shows New York as well and other states and could be used anywhere. Steve Mabee from the Health Department was there, and this is a fascinating tool that at some point I hope to have the opportunity to show you, because about 2 minutes, I could probably have showed it to you in less time than it takes to tell you about it, but you can correlate things like, with data already in there, what are the water basins in Pennsylvania correlated with, where are their drill sites, what are all the drill permit sites correlated with where there have been accidents, and you can come up with the points and then the information about them. So, and you wouldn't have to use it just for fracking. It could be poverty rates related to where there are schools. I mean, anything we've got data for, you could pull up with this. So it's fascinating, and at some point our staff may be interested in it. I'm happy to show it to people. I've got my computer here with samples up if people want to see it.
Carol, is there a website to go to?
Yeah, fracktracker.org, fracktracker.org. There are one or two just tips for using the site that make it easier. I mean, it's you can work out how to use it yourself. There are one or two tips about how to grab the points and where do you click that are helpful to be shown, but literally with 5 minutes of training, you could actually start to use this.
Thank you very much. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of items for you this evening. First, I want to thank Mike Lane and Pat Pryor for coming to the Farm City Day up at Swaya Lichen Farm, just outside of the city, going up Bostwick Road. Our goal was to entertain at least 1,000 folks, and the numbers that I heard, Pat, were we went over that number. It was a wonderful day, and I hope you folks had a good time. I got there about 2:00, so I missed both of you, but I didn't leave there till after 6:00, so it was very nice. And I had greetings from our state senate. A candidate to pass along because she was detained elsewhere. Did I say that right, Pam?
That was good, Frank. Thank you.
The other item, or another item, for those of you, I know some of you like to attend the watch fire out at Lansing at Myers Point. September 17th, the Vietnam Veterans Association of Chapter 377 is sponsoring it, as we always do every year. It's Friday, September 17th. Starts, you know, around dusk. Get there a little early, and if you have scrap wood, the idea is to set a fire so that the watch fire does what it's supposed to do. And if you have anything you want to bring along, please bring along. Bring it along. The last item I have today is to let you know that I was confirmed as a member of the Blue Ribbon Task Force and Commission on the Future of Farming in the state of New York. And Pat is the alternate. We met for the second meeting up in at the Empire Farm Days up in Seneca Falls, and it's our goal to give to the governor at the NYSAC conference, or his representative, a copy of the report that highlights the importance of agriculture in New York State. The draft that we had to review, and sorry, Pat, my copy's in this. Your copy is a loose leaf. indicates that the emphasis is on dairy, and as you might suspect, yours truly had to do some research to see why equine isn't in there, and it'll be in there, along with wine, veg crops, grains. There's a whole myriad of other agricultural endeavors throughout the state, which, as you know, employs over 40,000 people in the state, touches every one of the counties. The importance is on where do we get our food from and what happens if the farmer doesn't exist. So we're meeting again. We don't have a firm date yet, Pat, but as you and I were talking on the phone, we're supposed to meet prior to the NYSAC conference, but in that week to finalize the draft report, and then we're supposed to present it that Friday at the NYSAC conference, but we'll have to stay tuned on that. If any of you have any ideas about what you'd like to include, we did get some recognition because of the agricultural focus area piece that our planning department put forward a couple of months ago from the comprehensive plan. That was recognized as part of what this county is doing to emphasize agriculture in the state. Worthwhile group, very nice bunch of people, and I learned my lesson about opening my mouth, because when I mentioned there were about 40, 45 elected officials there, and you have greetings from Steve. He's tired of seeing people from Tompkins County on these commissions. You too, Joe. He didn't want to see you again either. Because I noticed that equine wasn't in there, and I met with the folks at Cornell about it, guess who's going to write the piece on equine? So don't open your mouth at any of these conferences. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Will, and then Jim.
Thank you, may I read the paper that there was over the weekend, I guess on Saturday, a incident at Ithaca College where they thought they had a major security situation on. Alert went out to the campus. Turns out that the incident was, according to the paper at least, had been a hoax, but for a while they thought they had a very serious situation. What was not reported in the paper, maybe not apparent even to folks on campus, is that the alert, which consisted of kind of an alarm and then the audio recording, was going out to the entire community and was audible where I live on West Hill. Very, very powerful message saying, you know, we have a security problem, follow campus security procedures, but it didn't identify where this was happening or where you should go for more information. I spoke with Lee Sherliff, and as one might expect, they actually got a lot of calls through a 911 system, but they unfortunately had not been pre-alerted as to what happened, so it took them a while to figure out what all was happening as well. The good news is that this was, as I say, turned out not to be a real incident. It was the first time that the system had been used other than just for practice purposes, and it is part of the federally required notification systems the campuses are supposed to have. And Lee is going to be working with folks at Ithaca College to see if the procedure can be tweaked a little better and that we can have a way so that anybody that is hearing this message can get more information in quickly. And so I just wanted to let you know that that's in progress.
Thank you, Will. Jim.
Thank you, Martha. Two things. Truensburg area, the annual Truensburg Fair is happening the last week in August. And I drive under the banner, but I can't remember what year, how many, if it's 88 years or 188. I'm not sure. At any rate, it's been a long time, and if you need to get a hit on fried bread, you should drive right up there, because Route 96 has been resurfaced completely, or it will be by August 20th, and it's very smooth and just wonderful to drive on. The other item that I neglected to mention over the summer is that the farmers market in Trumansburg is open every Wednesday night from 4 to 7, and I'm sure it will continue through the fall season, and at the north end of town, at the village, and it was built. All the pavilions that were built by volunteer help, and there were some fundraisers that helped bring money in, and I believe there were some grant money involved also. But the latest addition is a very cool bandstand that many of you who went to Grassroots saw, and now it's up in the middle of the farmers market in Trumansburg waiting for the first wedding ceremony or whatever might happen there. But at any rate, it's a really cool event, 4 to 7 Wednesdays, and I'm sure it will continue through the fall season. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Anyone else? Mike.
Frank, I'm glad you mentioned Farm City Day, because it was pretty impressive again this year. I think back to when one of the predecessors in this chair, Dan Winch, was the one who was the mover and shaker on the legislature that helped work with Cooperative Extension to bring forth that annual activity. It's nice to go out there, and thanks to the Baker family for opening their farm for people to go up. Beautiful farm, well-kept, a lot of livestock to see, and a lot of people coming in with children, and that's, I think, one of the best parts, so the children can see what's happening, what the animals are about, what crops are. You could walk right up to the cornfield, which the corn in that field was almost twice as tall as I am. They had hay rides and other things. It points out what's so important about agriculture in Tompkins County. And I was glad to be there. Sorry I had to leave before you arrived, Frank, but went off to the Dryden Lake Festival, which was another great event. We've had, it seems like, a record number of festivals in Tompkins County this year. People love them. Volunteers work so hard to put them together. They give people a good time, and they keep our spirits up in a time when the economy is not as good as it ought to be. So those are things that are good about Tompkins County, and they'll continue right through the fall. There'll be lots of things in September and then into the holiday season. So there's a lot of good things in this county of ours.
Thank you, Mike. Pat.
I'll just add to the festival theme we seem to be hitting tonight. I just want to say congratulations to all the volunteers who worked out in Lansing on Saturday at the Harbor Fest and put together a wonderful festival this year. I think one of the things that was great about Saturday was that the weather was so cooperative. So we had the largest festival yet, right down by the lake at Myers Point, and a wonderful time. I just second everything that Mike just said about the way a community can come together and show the best of itself on our various festivals.
Thank you, Pat. Yeah, you really can't be bored in Tompkins County. So,
that's right.
Anyone else?
Martha, were you going to talk about your canoe race?
No. Well, okay, the Dryden Democrats and the Dryden Republicans had three races, and the boat I was in came in closest to any of the Democratic boats. The next meetings are for a while are going to be on the water, I think. No, it was Dan Lamb and I were in a boat, and Marianne Sumner and Simon St. Laurent and Elsie Gutchess and Jason Leiferall were good sports about it, but didn't quite come in. I will tell you that the boat that we went against, we had to go around a buoy, and as we went around, I'm sorry to say, the Republicans in the other boat grabbed onto the boat and our boat and held us up. So I swear, really, it happened, and no foul was called. We lost, but that's how it goes, I suppose, also. They're in love and canoe races, I don't know. But it was fun, anyway. So
was it witnessed by anyone?
Yes, indeed.
And, you know, often that's a function of the not the referee being partisan. But
might have been.
Maybe it was due to something that had happened in your boat.
No, I don't think you can blame the victim on this one, Frank. I saw somebody. Kathy, did you have your hand up? Somebody else had their hand up.
Yeah, but how do I follow that?
I don't know.
I can tell you that we're going
to
have
to change the subject before Frank got another.
I'll do my best. I'm going to do my part. We've had a couple of the community meetings, the town hall meetings, and we're going to have a third. It'll be at Cooperative Extension this Thursday, the 19th at 7 p.m. Joe and Marcia have graciously agreed to be there, and I'm going to be there. The Fall Creek Neighborhood Association is sponsoring it along with me. I'd like to invite all my colleagues and anybody who wants to come. We'll talk about the budget, the constraints, the challenges, and a little bit about our framework for this year. So I do hope people will come Thursday, 7 p.m., Cooperative Extension, 615 Willow Ave, and we'll have some light refreshments and hopefully some good times.
Thank you, Gabby.
Didn't quite compete with the canoe race, but I tried.
But you changed the subject, so that was great.
Now can we go back to that?
No, we're done. But yeah, we'll be working on our strokes for the next summer. Anyone else? All right, we have a special presentation tonight from the planning department. Ed and Katie, do you want to come on up? I don't know whether you're going to do it from here or there, but okay. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. And this is Katie's presentation. I just want to say that you're not being asked to take any action on this energy and greenhouse gas emission strategy tonight. It will be coming to you subsequently for endorsement. But this is a strategy that's been developed as a result of the element of the comprehensive plan that set a long-term goal of 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. And also said we needed to set an interim goal and strategy to get there. So this strategy deals with what we can do between now and 2020. And with that, I'll turn it over to Katie, but I'll let her get things turned on first.
And in your packet, cool. You got the strategy itself, and in the red folder tonight, you have what appears to be the slideshow we're about to see. Thank you, Ed.
Very good. Thank you. I didn't actually listen to Ed's intro while I was fussing around with everything. So this did come out of the 2008 amendment to the comprehensive plan dealing with energy and greenhouse gas emissions. Within that amendment was a goal of an 80% reduction in emissions by 2050. When that was presented as a goal, it was recognized that it would be important to take steps along the way, milestones and strategies, to figure out how to actually reach that big goal by 2050. So this is the first of these kinds of documents. We're looking at trying to achieve a 20% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2020. So the big conclusion is that it can be done. The asterisk on that is that it is going to take a lot of work by really everyone in the community to make that happen. Within the document, you'll see that we need to cut emissions by about 277,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent. The strategies outlined in the document total about 290 metric tons, so you can see it's about 5% over target. And how will we achieve these goals, this overarching goal? We're relying pretty heavily on higher education, making up almost half of the emissions reduction. And then all of the 10 new local measures outlined in the strategy make up about a quarter of the reduction. Then you got about 19% from the state, then some from federal, other community measures as well. And I should say that the state and federal measures are all actually things that are in place already, not just being talked about. Start with a higher education wedge. We're very fortunate in the community that all three of our institutions of higher education have made pledges to be carbon neutral by 2050. Cornell and Ithaca College both have actually action plans in place on how they're going to meet their reductions by 2050, and TC3 has one that's well underway as well. New York State government is recognized as a leader in a lot of energy planning and energy activities in the nation. The Renewable Portfolio Standard is dealing with reducing the emissions associated with electricity by having a 30% renewable component by 2015. So by 2020, we expect to have 11% of our emissions associated, a reduction associated with both the Renewable Portfolio Standard and the REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is the first of its kind in the United States. It's a market-based mandatory cap-and-trade system with 10 states in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic region. And then also part of the ARA, or stimulus fund money, required that states that took that money needed to update their energy code. New York State is in the process of doing that, and by the end of this year should have a new, more energy-efficient code in place, and experts are expecting that all new construction will be about 15% more efficient. Federal government, the aspects that we focused on for this plan dealt with the CAFE standards, or the vehicle emission standards, as well as new standards that they have in place for lighting and some appliances. So you can see that there's a significant impact from that within the planning horizon for this as well. Other community efforts include what other municipalities are doing, school districts, and industry. I think everyone's well aware that really all the municipalities are looking at ways to reduce their energy bills right now, as are the schools, and there's a lot of activity. Right now, the city is the only one that has actually done emissions inventorying work and have an action plan in place. They've been achieving about 1% emissions reductions per year, so we expect that to continue out into the planning horizon. All the towns, there have been a lot of grant proposals with multi-jurisdictional proposals looking at reducing their facility and operational energy use. And I think everyone's aware public schools are doing a lot to try to reduce their energy use as well. And we expect a 10% reduction from industry, given incentives both locally and at the state level for energy efficiency. Now to dive into what we've identified with the new local measures, here's kind of a general breakdown on the emissions savings that we could see from the 10 new local measures proposed in the strategy. The first one is the PACE program, Property Assessed Clean Energy. It's addressing the needs of our existing building stock, recognizing that they're not going away anytime soon, and we don't want them to, but we would like to make them more efficient and cost less for their residents to live in. So it's tying energy improvements to the property tax bill and paying it back over a long period of time. We're hoping that by 2020 we could have around 8,000 units more energy efficient under this program and around 323 units with a renewable energy systems. The second one is building on the great work that's already being done by the Solid Waste Division of the county. Right now they have achieved a 60% waste diversion rate from landfills, meaning that all of that waste is not going to a landfill and creating methane and having emissions associated with trucking it to the landfill. So the Solid Waste Division has a goal of increasing that percentage to 75% by 2015. They are proposing single-stream recycling with more materials being recycled, expanded composting program, reuse program, and increasing their green purchasing programs. And again, building on the Solid Waste great model that they have for their re-business partnership program, proposing an energy partnership program of sorts, so that trained energy auditors would go into local businesses, schools, and institutions and work one-on-one with those organizations and work on energy efficiency, green fleet management, and tie it into the waste reduction that they could tap into through the re-business program. The next one is transportation demand management, which is really kind of a fancy language for saying that we would be really focusing on the users of transportation and trying to make it easy for them to make choices that aren't single occupancy vehicle trips. Some of the outcomes that we'd like to see would be bike boulevards in the city, which means that it focuses on the user of the bike as the primary user of that street. 34-mile multi-use trail commuter network within the urbanized area. The Way to Go program, promoting and educating consumers on transportation options. Having the transportation network seamlessly integrated and increasing transit service, outreach, education, all the things to make it easier for the users. I'd like to note, too, that these really come out of the Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council's 2030 long-range transportation plan that was completed earlier this year. And just if all of this was successful, there would be about a 16% decrease in drive-alone commutes, with that being made up through increases in carpooling, transit, biking, walking, and work at home. And I will also note that Ed and I have a meeting scheduled later this week with the TCAT officials to make sure that we're all on the same page on this one, and we'll be reporting back to the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee on the results of that meeting. Alternative fuel vehicles. Obviously, there's a lot of this that we have no real control over. It'll be rolling out new technologies by manufacturers. But there are some things that we can do to prepare our community for this transition to new fuel vehicles. We can be mapping where charging fuel and fueling stations are, sharing that widely with the public, educating people on pros and cons of the various technologies that come out. And I think the most important thing is really actively trying to anticipate stumbling blocks. Our community is kind of known for early adopters and trying to identify early on what the concerns might be. You probably are all very well aware of the county government energy policies, but between 2007 and 2009, a number of policies were adopted having to do with fleet management, waste reduction, and facilities, and just making sure that those are very actively implemented and tracked and put in place to the full extent. Also, county facility energy improvements. Through the county's consultant, Johnson Controls, a number of really important projects have been identified in the last year or so, trying to get grant funds to make the improvements. But they could see great cost savings, looking at lighting improvements at the Recycling Solid Waste Center, better temperature controls at Public Works, solar hot water at Public Safety and Human Services are some of the ones that have been identified. Biomass for rural heating. What that is trying to get at is a lot of the people in rural areas are still using very high-emitting and oftentimes high-cost fuels of fuel oil, electric, and liquid propane, and trying to identify those households and do a pilot where they would get to have locally produced biomass stoves and boilers. And actually, I will say that here's an example of one of these that is already being started in the community. Cooperative Extension was successful in getting some money from the Park Foundation, and they're working closely with Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Service to try to reach 24 homes to do this program. And I do know that they sent an early draft of this document to the Park Foundation to try to show them that it was identified in here. So it's an example of how this plan could help, trying to tap into funding sources. District heating feasibility study. It's been talked a lot about in the community, having a loop around a confined area to distribute heat and cooling to those buildings that are within that loop from a centralized energy source. But it's got zero savings for emissions right now, but we need to do some things that are just looking towards the future. And this could be a great opportunity for the community to really wean itself from its energy dependence and do things differently. But we need to find out how it's done, what its costs, and all that before anyone can make an educated decision on anything. And the last one is the energy roadmap. Again, there's no savings right now, but it's looking towards the future. And this is looking at what is our renewable production potential, what's our future demand, how does the community want its energy structure to look like in the future, what's the best choice for our community, and then identify the steps that need to happen to make that to make that a reality. It's a summary of the new local measures, and that is the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Katie. It's inspiring and daunting at the same time. So are there any questions? Will.
Thank you. Katie, what is the driving force behind this? Is this just a desire to do the right thing environmentally? Are there mandates that are directing this? Why are we doing this?
Well, we're doing it because the county in 2008 adopted the amendment to the comprehensive plan, which had in it its major goal of making a commitment for the community to reduce its energy greenhouse gas emissions 80% by 2050.
So it's a self-directed goal?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I would encourage people to, if you have some time, to read it through. It's only 25 pages long. Try to read the technical appendix if you can. It's only 10 pages. We really worked very hard to make this as user-friendly, short, concise as possible, and be very transparent in all the assumptions that were made for the numbers that are shown up there.
Kathy.
Is that report online?
It is. It's in your packet. I think an old version's online, but I'll get it up first thing in the morning.
I'm interested in the fact that the PACE program is the sort of single biggest new local measure, and I know it. The Cooperative Extension has done a little bit of sort of calculating. If we were to have that many homes or buildings using the PACE program to install, conservation measures or energy retrofits, calculating how many jobs would be created too, local jobs. So in many cases, there's a sort of, in this case, there would be a government input to get something started, but then it's the sort of program that will really repay not just in energy savings, but in terms of training a workforce, having a workforce that locally that is enhanced by this program too. So
right.
That's great.
Putting in insulation isn't something that can be outsourced to right. some other country or some other area. You have to train the people here, and they have to do the work here.
Thank you very much, Katie and Ed. We appreciate it. Peter.
I have a couple of questions. First, the reduction in the number of vehicle miles, where is that on the list of things? I know you referred to it, but which one is it?
That would be within the TDM, Transportation Demand Management.
Okay. So how much do you reckon will be, how many vehicle miles, what fraction of the total number of vehicle miles that
are currently used in the county will be reduced by that, by the that program.
I don't have that figure. I believe that is in the 2030 long-range transportation plan, but we looked more at mode shifts. So we looked at percentage of people currently driving alone, working from home, that type of thing, and what that might mean to actual passengers. But we didn't do a vehicle miles traveled analysis for this plan.
Okay. I guess the reason I'm asking is just to have some sense of actually, how much do you reduce the traffic by doing this? And that's a number that would mean something to me. And megaton CO2, kiloton CO2 per whatever is something that I don't quite know how to digest. But the other thing is rural biomass. Now, how does that reduce carbon dioxide? It's burning something. Why would that be any less productive of greenhouse gas than anything else?
Because it's burning a carbon source. I'm bad with the technology. where's Ken Schlatter when you need him? It would be burning a renewable source that... Go for it, Ed.
The carbon in biomass is essentially recycled through the atmosphere. It's captured by the plant material. And then it's recaptured because you're burning biomass that is sustainably harvested, so that it captures as much carbon as is being emitted in any given year. That's the idea. It's locally generated, grown biomass that is sustainably managed means that you're capturing an equal amount of carbon each year as to what is being put back into the atmosphere.
But you'd be capturing it anyway, even if you didn't burn it, right?
Well, not necessarily if you weren't sustainably managing lands for that purpose. I mean, that's part of the equation.
You have to be growing more than to use.
You have to be managing it properly in order to make sure that you're capturing and you're doing it on a sustainable basis. If you went in and you cut all the trees down in the county and burned them over 20 years, that would not be accomplishing what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay, all right, yeah, good. And the third question I had was, I don't understand exactly why a circulating steam pipe and cold water pipe to be a source of heat and cold when you need it is particularly reduces the amount of carbon emissions. I mean, I can see it could save money, maybe a more efficient way of doing it than everybody burning their own fuel, but I don't really understand why it actually lowers the amount of greenhouse gas. I mean, I realize you didn't claim anything for it, but that was, I thought, because you didn't
have
calculated it. But I don't understand why that's a mechanism for lowering greenhouse gas.
I think it has to do with the efficiency of the unit that you can get on a larger scale to serve a wider region than each person having their own furnace, and it might be really old, and then some people have money to replace this one. It just has one furnace that can be kept at its very optimum efficiency, as well as the flexibility. The way it's designed is that anything that gets can be burned in it, basically. So you can capture whatever market. If something comes on that's lower carbon source, you can burn that instead. There's flexibility built into the system.
Okay, thank you.
I would add about biomass, if it's locally harvested, it's a local source of energy. It's enhancing the local, you know, the value of land locally, and you know, people's economic opportunities are enhanced, so it's sort of a second order effect.
Yeah, that may be good, but I mean, it that by itself doesn't reduce, you know, may have other good benefits, like many of these other things. Like if you walk, it helps your health, in addition to reducing your CO2 emission.
Carol?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was very confused when I first started hearing about biomass. As well, and my understanding is that this is not the old-fashioned cut down a tree limb and burn it in a very inefficient way in your stove where most of the heat goes up the chimney. It was the stove that I used to have when I lived out in Danby. That this all depends on having more efficient fuel pellets and also much more efficient stoves, and that similarly for the savings that they're achieving at the Cornell heating plant, that it and for in our homes, the furnaces that we have in our homes, that the savings are really from having much, much more efficient burning of those. And what we can do on a county level is not provide everybody with a new stove, but put in place some programs that might encourage in various ways and use various mechanisms to help people to fund or borrow money. And so my understanding of this plan is that none of it is, that each of the pieces are something that would have to be decided upon separately, that a lot of them depend on funding falling in place from different programs, on us deciding to take certain actions in the future, and that there is no sort of monolithic here's what this plan will achieve altogether, that the pieces would have to be implemented or explored over time. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For my report, I wanted to mention that I thought somebody might mention this for public privilege, that Attorney General Andrew Cuomo will be coming to Tompkins County on Thursday, this Thursday, 11 o'clock at the Women's Community Building. I believe he's, and all our, he's a Democratic candidate for governor, but the entire public is invited. And I understand he's making some remarks, but then there would be time for individual questions. So people are encouraged to go 11 o'clock at the Women's Community Building. I want to report a little bit. Frank.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
Is he coming here as a gubernatorial candidate, which is a political, carries with the political overtones? Is he coming here as the Attorney General?
I think as a candidate, and I was just letting people know as a sort of public information item.
Because I think it's inappropriate to make a, if we're going to do that, we ought to make sure that any other candidate in any other party is also announced the same way. And we've tried over the years not to make political statements in this room.
Okay. I was thinking of it as public information, but okay, understood. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Medicaid Task Force, NYSAC. I think you got information. Marcia put out a press release that I've been asked to serve on a fairly short-term and fairly intense task force on the state takeover of Medicaid. We met in Albany on August 10th, and I'm chairing one of the subcommittees, the Service Delivery Subcommittee, and we met over phone and webinar yesterday. The commission is in response to a piece of legislation that was passed and signed into law during the session this year that says that the Department of Health is tasked and required to come up with a plan by November 30th of this year, a plan for the state takeover of the administrative costs of Medicaid, and that plan would begin to be implemented by April 1st, 2011. That is the next fiscal year. I sat down with Patricia Carey and Tom Herden before I went to Albany for the meeting, and they filled me with all sorts of things I hadn't known before about how this would actually, what they understand this proposal to mean would actually cost counties more. So I went and thought, well, this is a novel idea. When I got there, it was clearly everyone in the room had the same analysis, that this was sounded good, but it in fact would cost counties more. So we have
set ourselves a goal of by early October putting together a report that says, you know, here are the things we're concerned about, here are our recommendations, and you know, what kind of how we would like to work with the state, or that we would very much like to work with the state as this plan develops. So I have meeting notes from all the three subcommittees, and I thought I would just outline very quickly a couple of the high points. The finance subcommittee basically has said, first, do no harm. That's a good one. They have stated that this must be, that this, whatever this is, and it's very unclear, it's very sketchy, must be part of a broader fundamental restructuring of Medicaid and all public health programs, delivery and financing in New York, and it must be integrated with the new federal program. So that's actually one of our strong, in the service delivery subcommittee, one of our strongest concerns is that it appears that they would be sort of throwing everything up in the air and it would come down in a different form starting next year. And then in a couple more years, we would be tasked to implement the federal changes under the Federal Health Care Reform Act. So there's a lot of concern about why would you even, you know, go down this road now, and it would be far better to sort of wait and see what happens with the federal program. I think the answer why is that the state has figured out that they will do this and they will save money, which of course means, again, that we'll be spending more. It appears that the proposals probably has to do with regionalizing the service centers. In some counties, in the larger counties, there are many outlets, many offices where somebody can go and apply for Medicaid. It would appear that this looks like they would consolidate existing centers. It might even, in upstate counties, it might mean consolidating into regional centers so that we wouldn't even have one per county. As the service delivery subcommittee has looked at this, there would likely be serious problems, serious impacts on clients if they did this. People, and if this included call centers, you know, you get your question answered through an 800 number maybe, or maybe online. We have serious concerns about how this would reduce access and really that sort of personal contact that our clients need for this program. There are a number of unintended consequences that, as I said, that would cost counties more. A big one is that most of our caseworkers actually do several different things. They treat a client who comes in a sort of holistic way, and they look at the eligibility and say, this is how, let's say you qualify for Medicaid, you're eligible, and let's look at food stamps. You're eligible for food stamps, you're eligible for heating assistance, et cetera. It appears that the state's proposal would be to take the Medicaid function and put it somewhere else. And we're not clear, does this mean take those people out of our social services building and create a new facility for those folks? What does that mean about the existing space? What does it mean about those other functions that the same people used to do? We might end up having to hire more local staff to carry out these programs. So we have some serious problems about this. There are a lot of workforce issues as well. You know, if Medicaid professionals become state employees, what does that mean? Does it mean, what about the administrative overhead? The facility management, IT services, personnel services, administrative services, are those going to be covered as well? So at the end of the sort of, one of the overriding conclusions is that NYSAC, and I think this is where we're going to come out, is that the state acknowledges that the administrative costs of Medicaid overall are about 2% of the cost of the program. That's pretty efficient. You know, private health insurance is 15 to 25% for administrative overhead. So we would propose. I think this is maybe one of the recommendations we'll come out with, but it was certainly discussed. Propose that admit that we continue to have that role, that we know what we need, what people need locally. We have a sense of our of each community. But the state, if they really want to reduce property taxes, if that's the idea here, is to reduce the burden on counties, then they should take over the benefit costs. That's the big enchilada there. That's where the money is. And, you know, just to remind people that the cap is only a cap on the increase. Every year our expenses do go up 3%. They could start by actually capping the local share of Medicaid and then take over an increasing share. So I am very glad to be on this committee. Patricia Carey joined us on the meeting yesterday. We are on an aggressive timetable, to come up with this report by early October. There will be meetings in the governor's office with staff to really hammer home what our recommendations will be. This is really could go, especially when paired with all the proposals about a property tax cap. This is a very serious issue for us, and I hope that. And I think we can turn this into an opportunity. If there's a real interest in making this a better program, there are a lot of ways to do it, and I think this is a good opportunity for counties to weigh in. So I'm pleased to be on it and hope that I don't have to miss any budget committee meetings because of having to go to Albany for it. But Peter.
Do you know off the top of your head just ballpark figures of how much money locally raised money, we spend on Medicare administration, and how much more would we spend under this, the state proposal? Just approximate numbers to get a feel for it.
I can tell you what we spend now. It's 11.2 or so million. Total. A percentage of that is for administration.
Is that 2%? Is that right?
Joe, do you know?
I don't know what the administrative piece of the 11. The county spends altogether about 11.2, 11.3 for the Medicaid program.
Right.
That's what we raise in local taxes. A fraction of that, I think a small fraction, is for administrative costs, but I don't.
Right, well, Martha said that it was a 2%. The administrative costs were 2%. So
of the whole program.
Okay.
Overall.
And then how much would it go up?
That's unclear. But one of the interesting things is that the part that we pay, $11.2 million, is based on the base year of 2005. That's when the cap was put in place, the cap on the increase. That's the basis of our weekly shares that we send to Albany to cover these costs. The proposal, we believe, I'm hedging this a lot because there's nothing on paper that the Department of Health has sent to us. That's part of this is all in the dark here, but. But based on prior conversations, the proposal, we believe, is that our weekly shares wouldn't change. So we'd still be paying on that chunk of money, that chunk of the $11.2 million, for administration. So I don't even know what it means to take over the administrative costs if we're still paying to the state that portion for administration. So there.
I quit. That's too complicated for me.
There are more questions than answers, but the problem is the time frame is really fast, and we're actually concerned that the goal is for the state to help close its budget gap for next fiscal year, and we know what that means. That means we're paying their bills.
Right. As Nancy Reagan said, if I'm allowed to say that, Frank Proto. My advice is just say no.
We can't do that. Some people have asked us, what happens if you just don't pay the mandates? Well, then there are 1,000 other levers that they get to pull that take money away from us for other things. It's just not possible. So any other questions? Thanks very much. County Administrator Joe Marion.
Thanks, Martha. I have a short report tonight. As you would expect, I've been pretty pinned down doing budgets that will be presented to you 3 weeks from tonight. The 2011 budget will come to you on September 7th. In terms of kind of preparing for that budget, and this really goes to the 11 people that Jim Dennis always says are watching on TV, it's good preparation to open up the webpage and look at the program impact assessment forms for a member of the public to understand the difficulty of the budget decisions that will have to be made this year, and understanding the programs that we deliver and why it's so tough to talk about reducing spending for programs. I think it's a real helpful tool to be able to open up that page and see exactly what the county does with its tax dollars. I hope the legislature has found the document useful. It's a first effort. It'll get better over time, but I do encourage members of the public, if they want to know what we do and where that money goes, this is a pretty good guide to inform them about that. While we're looking at 2011, we're also keeping our eye on 2010. The state budget is out. We're still doing the assessment of the state budget. I don't think it's a catastrophic situation with state aid. I think TC3 took the worst of the hits, and I think we all ought to be concerned about that. But in general, I think we're holding our own this year. David has talked about cash flow challenges, and we certainly have some because the state is delaying the provision of some benefits. But you've also heard David talk about our sales taxes that seem to be kind of back on track, which is a good sign for the economy, a good sign for our budget. I do want to remind you that the way we can control spending in this budget is by controlling the individuals who are hired by the county. And that's something the legislature allowed me to do last year, I think, if not the year before, to approve every position before it gets filled. And that's a way that we can regulate spending in the government. I will tell you that I don't have to say no very often because department heads get it. And they've been very cautious about filling positions, knowing the situation that we're in, especially as we get ready for 2011. So whatever possible positions have been held vacant to be able to control spending. I'll remind you also that we haven't spent our FMAP money for 2010. Unlike a lot of counties and unlike the state of New York, we held that money back as a hedge against some things that could happen over the course of the year. And that hedge is still there for us. So in terms of something that can help us balance, if things do get a little difficult, we still have that asset available to us. So again, we're rapidly getting ready for the presentation of the budget in a few weeks and keeping our eye on 2010. And again, I do hope the public takes a look at those forms that are on our webpage to get a good idea of what we're doing with that money.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions for Joe? David Squires, Finance. I'm sorry, County Attorney. Jonathan.
You can skip me.
Skip me.
I have no report, but as the chair already mentioned, I request a brief executive session to discuss litigation at the end of the meeting.
Thank you, Jonathan. David Squires, Finance Director.
You know, when Wendy said about the distinguished youth, you know, brightness when she entered the room, and the darkness when I step up here and speak to you. But I have a few things to say. One is next week we'll be actually selling Biggs B. And last week we had a sale that had about 20 registered bidders, and most of the contents went actually for metal contents rather than reuse, but still in all, a substantial amount of product, furniture and chairs and all, were diverted from the landfill because they were bought or carted away and didn't go into dumpsters. So like I say, that we anticipate the sale closing next week. Another item, we got notice that the town of Enfield has elected to take their sales tax in 2011 as a credit rather than a cash payment. And the importance of this is that the sales tax, rather than being paid out to them as it's received, their share will be applied against the county share of the tax levy. And so in 2011, the county's tax rate within the town of Enfield will go down dramatically, but the town tax rate for the town budget will go up dramatically. Usually what happens is a town elects to take the sales tax directly, and it drives down the town budget rate and increases the county. Overall, it shouldn't have any effect on the total tax, but if somebody looked at the particular line, there'll have to be an explanation. And the town supervisor said they intended to inform their community about how it was going to work. I was absent the last meeting, attending a treasurer's meeting, and you passed a bond resolution. Well, we're acting on that bond resolution for Ellis Hollow. We have a note sale on September the 8th. To provide the cash flow financing for the Ellis Hollow Road and also for the computer aid dispatch program update, where we're going to be selling the local what we need to complete that project. It's a short-term sale, because in December we'll be converting almost all of our outstanding notes into permanent financing, because interest rates are unbelievably historic lows, and so we have to take advantage of that opportunity before the end of the year. So we'll have a rather large bond issue in December when these notes come due. And finally, and one of the reasons why we're waiting is because we can't really go to the market effectively unless we have our audited financial statements included in our official statement. And I just received the draft of those financials for 2009, and so I sent a message to Chair of Budget and asked that the Audit Committee meet after the next budget meeting next week for the auditors to come over and give us a brief overview of the draft financial statements. I will say that we ended up 2009 when the audited statements stable. There is some weakening in our financial position from terms of liquidity, but in terms of our fund balance, it's better than we ever expected, that the fund balances remained stable compared to the prior year, which I would have lost money, because I would have bet that we were going to decline by at least about 10%. So that's the good news for today. So I'll quit where I'm ahead.
Thank you, David. Any questions for David? Peter.
I just want to make a brief comment to something to Joe's talk, if that's all right. I didn't get my hand up fast enough.
Okay, hold on. Is there anything for David? Okay, thank you, David. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that talking a little bit about the those program sheets that were passed around. I personally, as a new person who finds this whole operation very contorted and confusing and hard to understand, I found those sheets extremely useful. I read every single page of the 250 pages, and I wouldn't claim that it was like a novel I couldn't put down. It took me many, many days of getting back to it and reading it, but I'm not sure I can remember more than 10% of what I read, but I did feel coming out of it that I'm pretty close to understanding what goes on in the county and what it is we do and how we do it. So I just wanted to say that I found it extremely useful.
Thank you very much. Good, well said. Carol.
Yeah, I just want to, in solidarity with Peter, I don't know if I could call myself an old person, as a middle person, I also found it very useful, and the discussions that we had as the one committee I've done, going through them, was helpful as well.
Thank you. All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? I see none, so we'll go to the consent agenda. Resolution A, if you have want anything to be pulled from the agenda, please just say pull. Amending membership of the Water Resources Council. Resolution B, funding of community celebrations grants. Resolution C, budget adjustments, tourism program. And Resolution D, scheduling a public hearing on the 2011 Tompkins County budget and the 2011-2015 Tompkins County capital program. And there is one appointment, Ellen O'Donnell to the Mental Health Services Board. We have a motion. Will moves. Frank seconds the consent agenda. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Our first committee is Health and Human Services. Frank Proto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health Committee met on the 11th, and it was a relatively, surprisingly enough, a light agenda for a change. We had scheduled a special meeting on the 31st of August at 3 o'clock to review the program sheets for the agencies. And just for clarification, I had Karen send out a clarifying memo. The agencies that we're primarily reviewing are the Human Services Coalition and the two or three programs under it. The SPCA, TCA, Tompkins Community Action, Cooperative Extension. We will have an abundance of agency sheets. Remember, this is not a budget review. This is simply reviewing for clarification if any of the committee members have questions about the programs. We're concerned that, and this is the part I had Karen clarify, we want to make sure that the folks, any agency individual that wants to attend beyond the ones that I've already mentioned, come with an understanding that they're not there to defend their program budget-wise. They're there if a question comes up from a committee member. We're not expecting a presentation from the agency individual. And we hope we can get through these in one afternoon, just so that we're all on the same page. I want to make sure that it's clear that in defense of our own departments that have already made these presentations, certainly to the health committee, remember we had 2 days of these already, that we don't give, in an effort to be overly fair, we don't bend over too far backwards and give the agencies more time than our own departments had to make a similar presentation. We've got to be fair. The one of the items that we did tackle, and I want to thank Dooley for spending an enormous amount of time on this. It's on the agenda tonight. As a matter of fact, I think we did it under the consent agenda to accept the bylaws and the revisions of the for the Board of Health. It took some time to wend through those because of some of the tweaking that had to be done, but those were approved by the committee. And the rest of the meeting was principally, there are some budget transfers that we'll get to under Jim's report. Some of it we already did. The rest of the meeting was spent discussing the effect of the state budget on the various departments. We had most of the department heads there, and it was a good opportunity for the committee to sort of sit back and hear some of the discussion. Next committee meeting, the next official or regular committee meeting is September the 8th. And we've already scheduled it for the new health department. We're going to meet up there. You're on your own to get up there. But we want to have a meeting up there so that we can all have a tour. Those of you that haven't been through the building, there'll be an opportunity for a brief tour of that building. And, Madam Chair, I think that is the end of my report.
Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome.
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dooley Keeper, Chair.
Thank you. I was out of town for our regular meeting, and I'm hoping that Leslin will let us all know what happened.
How about we met, we talked. Thank you, Dooley. No, F and I did meet on the 6th, and we had some guests. Residents of Pine Tree Road, who we heard from at least one tonight, bringing to our attention their concerns for the work to be done on Pine Tree Road. We did ask for it to be an agenda item because it needed a lot more discussion than allowing them just a few minutes at the beginning of the meeting for public comments.
Leslie, I can barely hear you.
Really? Quite unlike me. All right. Pull up to the microphone. The larger part of our meeting was spent on the budget assessment forms, looking over those, as well as we have an executive session for solid waste on negotiations for some facility work. A very good presentation, and I'm sure at some point all of the legislature will have a chance to see some of the proposals being offered. That was the extent of our meeting. I can't think of anything else. We did have the one resolution, which is on our agenda tonight.
Leslie, do you want to move that agenda, that resolution A?
I sure can. It is, if I can find it, this one. It's resolution E, approval of county sites for Public Arts Commission's mural and street art program. And I so move.
Mike seconds. I'm going to introduce this, and is there any
question?
Frank.
Okay. Question or comment?
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted, several years ago, Nancy Schuler and I were the instigators of putting artwork in our jail, in various departments, in the old jail conference room, scattering them artwork around so that there was some appreciation throughout the county in our building. So I'm glad to see that we're continuing to pursue this, but I want to raise a concern, or at least raise a question that I have already raised with Jonathan. In my other life, I'm an officer with HSBC Bank, as some of you know, all of you should. The east wall of our assessment building faces that bank. While I suspect what goes on that wall probably will be tasteful and will pass some sort of muster as far as what the county will permit. The concern I have is that at the appropriate time, and this is what Jonathan and I were talking about, I don't have a clue, and I think it's incumbent on Jonathan to research it, how much of that parking lot is owned by the county and how far the line from the bank goes towards that wall. The concern being that anyone who's going to be painting or doing something on that wall needs to erect some sort of a scaffold or structure in that parking lot to do it, unless, as some of us suggested, you rappel off the top of the building, or as Pam suggested, you use one of those window cleaning apparatus where you can lower yourself. Anyway, seriously, some research has to be done before anybody's permitted to erect anything in that parking lot in order to do the painting on the building, assuming we approve this, and I suspect we will. Just a heads up.
Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome.
Noted.
Dooley.
That sounds like I missed a good discussion. The maximum of 3 months, which is listed in the second resolve for the graffiti artist's work, when I read it with fresh eyes, it struck me that that is a really short period. And I didn't know whether that got any further discussion at committee or not. I'll move to make it a maximum of 4 months, because 3 changes in a year seems like plenty to me for that long.
I don't care. I think that's fine.
It's friendly.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
So that's okay? That's acceptable?
That is very okay.
Okay. All right. Frank?
Yeah, Martha. Lesson, can you say something about what's the review process, if any, about what will go on these buildings?
Well, I can't say a lot about it because I don't sit on a public art commission. but I know that they are very particular and are, you know, really thorough in requesting submissions and reviewing the submissions and approving what it is. And so this is a great group of individuals, including Sally Grubb, who is at a Tompkins County Public Library, Caleb Thomas, who's a community member, Brett Bossart, I think is his last name, who is from the Community Arts Partnership. So they are very thorough in reviewing the sketches or proposals from artists who want to use these sites. A good example is some that is under the Green Street overpass. There is a mural that was just commissioned by the Public Arts, by the Public Art Commission. They had a call for proposals, and people, you know, came forward with that, so that it's not anything that's offensive and so on. So they really do put a lot of work into it. But I certainly can reach out to them for more information if you would like. Okay. Yes.
Thanks.
Tim?
I have a long and storied history as a member of a civic art committee. Mayor Ed Connolly, back in 1976, appointed me to the first city civic art committee. We had a lot of volunteer art that wanted to be given to us, and I put together a committee of people who actually knew about art, and I was probably the least knowledgeable person, but they did let me chair the committee. And we made some selections of art that was donated to us, and we had positions for it, or sites, and it was turned down roundly by the rest of the city council, and who were all smarter than me, and obviously had different views of art. And I think it's almost an impossible task. The budget will be bad this year, but selecting art and getting everybody to agree on it could be easily the worst thing you ever want to be involved in. So that's that comment. My second comment is, I've been getting a lot of emails about Pine Tree Road, and as many of you had. We heard a person this evening talking about a bridge that's going to allow trucks to come under, and I know that I was looking through the list of committees, and it was apparent to me that you were all going to have to deal with that. And the only question I'm throwing out is this another Hanshaw Road or something similar to that? No one has to answer.
We're on the resolution. So, and then I can give just a little thought or feedback on that. Some of the art that the Public Art Commission has also approved is the cityscape that's on Cinemopolis downtown. So these are folks who know about art and are very particular about it.
And before we go over to Pine Tree, the fifth resolve, which is at the bottom of this page, the first page, says that the Public Art Commission will bring its recommended art choices to the appropriate program committee of the legislature for committee approval and possible contractual suggestions. So, that sounds like a lot of a lot of authority for us. I mean,
it is
that committee.
Whoever that committee is.
That would be you guys.
It is. This had been at F&I, I think, at three committee meetings when it first introduced, and it was a larger discussion, and then we came back for a resolution. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, all the bases were covered.
So Kathy's next.
Thank you. I'm willing to support this. I think it's a community building endeavor. In the context of the resolve that mentions possible contractual suggestions, I'm guessing y'all already thought of this, but in the event that there's a need to, let's say the funding runs out or the program's over or whatever, as part of the contract, will they take care of covering it up so that it doesn't just sit there and get more and more faded or possibly erode in places. I'm thinking in particular of the library surface, which is already kind of pebbly and could be distressing if it was, let's say, even vandalized or something like that. So I would hope, and I bet you all discussed this ad nauseum at the committee, that there was some provisions in the contract made for that.
So we did talk about it, and Mike, you can also help me out because there was one of those meetings I wasn't, but we did talk about who will be responsible, because clearly it would not be me up there scrubbing things and cleaning it, and, you know, unless it's a community project, I'll be happy to paint it over. But it's one of the things that when we get to the point where there actually is something that will be an RFP or whatever it is that will be approved, that language will be included. Who will be responsible then for making sure that this? But we did talk about it to make sure it's not going to be sitting on the county, because, you know, clearly legislators have other things to do.
Kathy and then Frank.
Okay, I want to ask a follow-up that's not entirely tongue-in-cheek. I know a little bit about the history of art around the county and how some of the art pieces that Nancy and Frank, among others, approved mysteriously migrated to parts unknown. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I'll just leave it at, I hope that the mural that goes on the library is fitting, and I'm sure it will be.
I'm sure it will be.
Frank,
thanks.
Something else?
Thanks, Marty.
I didn't
steal. Please understand, neither Nancy nor I were responsible for the artwork on a particular bridge in town that raised a lot of concern over the years. We did pictures mostly. The question I wanted to ask is the last resolve.
What's the last resolve?
Are we eligible, or will this be an eligible project for application to the Tourism Advisory Board, perhaps for funding under celebrations or artwork, and then there'll be adequate funding provided by that group?
I think this is not our program.
No, but no. I mean, would the program be eligible to apply to that?
Who knows? They'll have to look at the criteria, and perhaps they will be.
Well, that may alleviate some of Jim's concern about tapping the county budget.
That's not going to be in our budget.
That was his second point.
To Jim's 11 fans, this is not a county program. It's not going to cost any county tax dollars. We're just letting our buildings be used. Okay. Anything else? Or can we vote, please? Peter?
We sure can vote, but I wanted to at some point respond to Jim's question about Pine Tree Road versus Hampshire Road.
Let's do one thing at a time. All right, ready to vote on the resolution.
Sorry about that.
No, it's an important topic. So.
Well, under the resolution.
All right, all in favor of Resolution E, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, so Pine Tree Road. Peter, you want to take it?
Yeah, just a this is not a facetious comment, okay, but as someone who's been involved in both of them, I think there are two things that are in common. They're both about a road, and they're both questions raised by less than happy residents, dwellers on that road, who disagree with the approach that we have as a county have taken on projects there. In that way, they're the same. But I think that the things that they're disagreeing about have nothing to do with each other. They're quite different and raise different issues. And as I was thinking, I could not see anything in common, except for those two things that I mentioned.
Leslie, did you want to add to that?
Some of the issues had to do with safety, that the road was dangerous, no sidewalks, etc. They talked about already having had a fatality on that road, the trucks and the truck traffic, and a number of things. However, we will have it on an agenda for a much larger discussion, because this was coming to us at a public comment section. It wasn't something that was on our agenda already. Some of us weren't even aware that it was an issue at that point until then. And so there'll be more discussion.
And there's no eminent domain issue at all. The project is happening way away from, half a mile away from where the residents are. Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much. Will?
Go for it. Okay.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
Capital
Plan Review Committee did not meet this month. We will meet next on September 9th. Government Operations Committee, Mike.
We had our special meeting on August 5th, at which meeting we reviewed all of our program information sheets. It was a good discussion, thorough, I think, and we did get through all of the departments. We're looking forward to the agency sheets that were becoming available fairly soon, I hope. I know we have them electronically, but I hope we're going to get paper copies the same as we have with the department. I wanted to point out to everybody that there's a map over on the big bulletin board here of the election districts, which particularly show the 15 legislative districts. And I asked Greg Potter at IT, and his department brought the map over. It's a map that goes actually dates back to some of it to 2001. I just thought folks could take a minute from time to time and just kind of get in their mind again what the districts are in the county, because next year we're going to be talking about the possibility of redistricting, and they're interesting districts, particularly around the city and the town of Ithaca, and just so you know what they look like in the whole countywide. Our next meeting is this Thursday. We have an early start. We're starting at 8:30. That'll start with Carol Kamen coming in to talk to us about the Civil War Commission, and then we'll be proceeding to our regular agenda.
Any questions for Mike? Thank you very much, Mike. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam McAsee, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. I am going to let Carol talk. Do the report for the meeting because she chaired it, but I just wanted to remind people that our next meeting is on the 1st of September for next month.
Thanks, Pam. We had a very full agenda, as we often do. I want to point out, Frank, you have been facing these 100-some-odd page program reviews. Was this month's agenda, it was 119 pages, and that's fairly regular for us for PDEC. We heard a presentation by Cindy Kimball, director of the Finger Lakes Tourism Alliance, which is primarily, it's a mass marketing, it's a marketing alliance for the whole Finger Lakes area, and they're proposing some changes in there in how they do membership, and it might affect exactly how we approve representation on that board, and PDEC is still discussing that. If people want to hear more, they can come and ask us. We heard a fascinating presentation on the results of the Chamora economic and analytics profile of visitors, and notes on that, because that as you all know, the funds from the occupancy tax fund, or the room tax, also known as the room tax, fund the tourism program. That is not a property tax. We have been wanting to understand who are the people who pay that tax. They are our visitors to Tompkins County, and they don't vote for us directly. They vote with their feet and their vacation dollars or their travel dollars. So it's important to understand who they are, where they're coming from, what brings them here, and what they find when they get here. And so through the room tax dollars, we spent $60,000
studying this question and heard a report. The full report is available on visitithaca.com, and I think we've gotten sections of it. But some of the most relevant points we heard, there were 843,000 visitors in 2009 to Tompkins County. 47% of them were here for college or university-related visits, which means that 53% were here for other reasons, which was very interesting. 48% of them leisure-related. Almost all, many of them visited parks and downtown Ithaca, which were fairly consistent places that got visited, and 88% were very satisfied with their visits. So these are just very scratch the surface highlights of this big long report, but that high a percentage of people very satisfied tends to mean repeat visitors. So again, there's more you can hear about that. We heard a very good report from Joe about the proposal for the tourism staffing position, and passed a resolution related to that, which should be coming to the Budget Committee upcoming meeting. You heard tonight about the energy strategy, which will come to us eventually when we pass that. We heard from Ed Marks about yet another realm where New York State is holding up local funds related to the, it's very scary with relation to the purchase of development rights program, that having to do with agricultural development. There's $70 million sitting there in the state, two local projects included that, they've been approved. Arrangements have been made. Property owners are counting on that going through, and we have, money has not come through. We tried to set a meeting date for to go over the program.
30th.
Did we? The 30th? 3 p.m. on August 30th. We will be doing that. And then I have anything else other than resolutions. I believe that brings us to the resolutions. There are some that we've already passed on the consent agenda, and now I have resolution F in your packets, page 9, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to resolution number G of 2010, authorizing a contract with the Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District to implement flood hazard mitigation program projects. I will point out that the environmental assessment forms are noted here as being on file with the clerk of the legislature. And this is the neg deck, and I so move.
Second. Frank seconds. Is there any discussion? All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
And then I have resolution G, which also relates to the flood hazard mitigation program, authorizing a contract with the Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District to implement flood hazard mitigation program projects. I will point out that the EAFs, aforementioned EAFs, are on file with the clerk of the legislature, and in your packets, you should have also gotten a two-page sheet that gave you an overview of that program and a list of the projects, but this resolution relates to the contract with the Soil and Water District to implement this program.
Is there
and
a second?
I so move.
Pat seconds. All right, discussion. Frank.
Yeah, I want to recognize that there was quite a bit of discussion at the committee with regard to several of the projects and also about the programs, delivering the program itself. In the write-up that you received that has the overview in it, there was an effort, and Scott Doyle is the individual within the department who actually oversees this program. Well, of course, under Ed as commissioner, but Scott is the actual person that oversees the program. Some of us felt that there was a need for greater coordination with the Soil and Water Conservation District folks because of some of the programs that they have that are federally funded that could save some money out of this flood mitigation program. And Scott was perfectly willing to work with that. The other is the earlier in the process, there's an outreach that has to take place to each of our towns and any municipality that might have a project. Scott sends a letter to alert them that they need to bring projects to his attention. In addition to that, if you're a resident that might have a project or just an interest in what's going on with regard to the program, they should be alerted throughout the county that they need to approach their municipality about potential projects on their own property because the municipality may not know everything that might be eligible. And that is, those letters are supposed to go out. We asked Scott to get them out earlier in the year because the time frame within which the municipality has to respond to Scott was less than 30 days in some cases, and some of them weren't even having meetings in that period of time. And that's going to be hopefully implemented the next round of these projects. While there was some discussion about a couple of particular projects, they all were approved, and some of them are in your districts, folks, so I would suggest that you might want to take some time to review them. The third item is coordination with this technical committee, so they're brought into the review process sooner than what has been the practice in the past. And all of those things were perfectly agreeable to the program administrator. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Anything else? Dooley.
I took Carol's advice and went and looked at the huge PDEC agenda packet and found more information about some of the projects. So I have a couple of questions. The last project on the chart that was handed out in our folders tonight is called Tagannett Creek Watershed Assessment. And I wondered if this is the kind of assessment that Malone and McBroom did for creeks on the east side of the lake. Is that what's contemplated?
Ed, do you want to take that?
Yes, that is what's contemplated.
And is there some reason not to go back to Malone and McBroom, since when the studies were originally done, it was felt necessary to have specialists?
We have been discussing this, the possibility of Malone and McBroom doing this. But it wouldn't necessarily have to be that.
Well, the contract is with Soil and Water, and I didn't think
right.
Soil and Water had the same set of skills. That's what concerned me.
Well, right, but the contract with Soil and Water would be to implement the overall program. The actual assessment of the watershed will be done with the subcontractor.
Okay, I guess I hope that the full legislature could be kept informed about that particular project. At least I would appreciate being kept informed about it, if that's possible.
Sure.
The other one I had a question about was study of, well, it's the same one, actually. It's described on the EAF as the Tagannett Creek watershed from western Tompkins County to the Tagannett Falls State Park. And my recollection is that Tompkins County used to control the road that ran along that creek, and we traded it away in the last couple of years as we exchanged road responsibilities with municipalities. And I wondered if that's the same road, that, if that's the creek and that's the road. Did I make sense?
I'm not sure what you're specifically referring to, but the road that's we have a problem with in that watershed is not one that was traded.
It's not the one that was traded. That's what I wasn't clear from the map or anything else.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we're ready to vote.
I have one last question.
Oh, okay.
Will the list of projects be appended to, will they appear in the minutes? Or may they? I'd like to request that they do. Not necessarily this chart, but there was a memorandum in the PDEC folder, which was just text describing the projects, and that might be easier to put into our minutes. Is that a possibility?
The whole memo?
No, it's a little over a page of writing.
Kathy?
It's easier, I think, than this chart.
All right. Certainly easy enough to insert. Okay, that'll be done. Ready to vote, then. All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous. Carol, thank you very much for the report. And Pam, should we skip over the Census Committee again?
Please.
All right. Budget and Capital Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you very much, Martha. We will have a meeting August 23rd at 3:30 p.m. We will not have a meeting on Labor Day, which would be the scheduled meeting in September. I believe we will have a meeting prior to the ledge meeting because we have one item that we have to pick up at that time. Right, Kathy?
Wait a minute.
Well, there was something that's...
That's public safety.
Oh, okay. Sorry. All right. At any rate, we will not have a meeting on Labor Day, but we will have a meeting August 23rd. Let me just say this. September and October, the EBC calendar is set, expanded budget committee. We will have the opportunity to look at, study, discuss every department and their budget as put forth by the county administrator in a period of weeks here, along with the numerous OTRs that will be a part of the whole process. Our last meeting consisted of some discussion. We have no items on the agenda that to be voted on. There were discussion about budget and a few other things. And what I want to say, and I hope I will see Joe nod in the affirmative, that sometime during the month of September, I would like to have a discussion of the rollover policy, the history of it, how it's evolved over a number of years, with an eye toward getting all legislators up to speed on how the rollover process is being used in 2010. And I think that would be beneficial to all of us. And I am not suggesting that we change the process. I think it has evolved to differently than some people dreamed it would when they first set the policy in place many years ago. So that would be something I would like to do in September during the same time that we're looking, beginning to look at the whole budget and the budget process for September and October. And at this point, we do not have set calendar days when the departments will appear. That will be coming soon, and we need to get back. We need to get with departments, and they need to figure out when they can fit in the calendar. But that too will happen, and when it comes time, they will all be here, and hopefully, as many of you who can be here will be here at the same time, and we can begin this arduous process that the county administrator and all the people around him have been working on for the whole summer.
Thank you, Jim.
Any questions?
Yeah, Frank and then Mike.
Jim, first a serious question. Rather than set up another special meeting to review or be brought up to speed on the rollover policy, is it possible that one of the, perhaps the very first budget, the expanded budget committee meetings could be extended by a half hour so that that presentation could be made, because most of us will be together.
Right.
As a consideration.
Yeah. Let me answer this way. If I gave the impression that there was going to be a special meeting, that's not the impression I was trying to give. So I think what we can do is certainly put that in, fill that in somewhere during all the times we're all going to be together.
I mean, even one of our legislative meetings under that special presentation piece, the way we had the planning department do it tonight, maybe we could do that.
Well, I would let me have a discussion with county administration before we promise anything that we can't deliver at this point. But the, clearly the discussion will be held.
The other thing, I just want to express my concern and disappointment that you're not having the meeting on Labor Day. Traditionally, the Budget Committee has sponsored the picnic at Stewart Park.
Well, except
Joe doesn't
that
know about that.
There will be, I think I'm going to see Andrew Cuomo somewhere, but I'm not sure.
Who? Who's that?
Better not.
Mr. Palladino, I don't know.
Oh, the attorney, thank you, Peter.
Rick Blasio.
Mike.
Jim and everyone, I just wanted to let you know that the Dryden legislators are planning one of the budget outreach presentations at the Dryden Community Cafe on the 2nd of September. So we're trying to get that together and get the publicity out on that. Marsha Lynch is helping us with that. The other thing I just wanted to ask, I keep asking this question, I'm seeing that a number of other counties are looking seriously at these early retirement incentives to see if they can save money. Wondered if your committee has been looking at that and wondered if we would get some kind of a report on that.
You may stop wondering. At the next meeting, we have a resolution authorizing a special retirement incentive that is a homegrown incentive that the county is thinking about doing. And my sense of it is, from looking at the resolution and having some part of the discussion, that it could bear some fruit for us, and we clearly can have that discussion, and it is scheduled for August 23rd.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Now I'm going to ask folks, we have two more committee reports and the unfinished business of Frank's resolution, and then executive session. Would you folks like to take a break now or just break when it's time for executive session? We shall keep going. Budget, Public Safety Committee, Nathan felt ill and had to
That'll
leave, so Leslie McBean, Claiborne Vice Chair, Public Safety.
So the Public Safety Committee met before our last legislature meeting, and so I was a little confused because I thought we'd already passed this resolution, but we just heard about it. So I'll take this opportunity to say congrats to our members of the Sheriff's Department who were awarded for the bravery, and somebody tell me what's the name of the
Kiwanis, right.
Kiwanis.
The Frank Hammer,
thank you, for their heroic and outstanding work. It's good to be recognized for doing those things, so congrats to them. We have a resolution that we talked about at our last legislature meeting, so I am just going to introduce the resolution. It's Resolution H, appropriation from contingent fund to cover expenses related to prosecution of high-profile cases with the district attorney's office. So move.
For a second. Pam seconds that. Any discussion? This is a Kathy.
I was just hoping for a summary of it for the public's sake.
So I'll give you the quick summary. So one of the things we did last year during our budget season was essentially to say the district attorney said, as things come up, instead of putting the monies in our budget and it's just sitting there, whenever they have cases that require a lot more special witnesses, etc., that she will come and ask for monies from contingent fund. So it freed up some monies from our budget last year. This was one of those years. And so some of the monies that got spent that she's asking for payments on was for the expert witness testimony on the in the COT trial that we know just concluded with a 25-year-to-life sentence for that gentleman, and the amount of $17,800, as well as paying the correctional facility in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, for housing them. That's in the amount of about $8,000. We also had some expenses related to the Greenwood grand jury investigation, Sean Greenwood, in the amount of about $7,400, as well as forensic work, and in the amount of close to a little over $2,000. And in addition, many of you knew of the case related to the numerous animals found in the home that were just being hurt. And so the housing and treatment of those animals that were seized, we are paying the SPCA for taking care of that in the amount of about $18,000. At our last meeting, we Frank pointed out that that was, you know, quite a bargain, because that cost could have ran anywhere in excess of $40,000. I think he said $45,000. So we are looking somewhere around perhaps $90,000 to $100,000 for all of these expenses. So we just wanted you to know that.
Thank you for the summary, Leslie. And if we're ready to vote, it's a short-form roll call. Kathy?
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Would anyone like to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous. Thank
I
you
want
very
to
much.
Add just a couple of things to public safety as well. At some point, we will be looking at, and please help me, Joe, I think it's the fire alarm business, and whether or not the county continues to do that. And we are continuing to have some good discussion and around our 911 system and how things are going with our partners.
Carol?
I'll just add also that I got a personal call, a call from a member of the Bangs family thanking us for our show of support, both in terms of a resolution and in terms of the personal collection that we took up and sent in on behalf of us personally.
I know Brian is not here today, and I'm sure he would have taken the opportunity to say thanks to those who had the chance to go this weekend to the fundraiser that IPD had. Two fundraisers, one for the Children's Miracle Network Make-A-Wish Foundation. It was a pancake breakfast, and then there was another one for in support for the Banks family. I'm sure that there will be others to come. You know, I know there were many people who were out of town and could not be there at either of these events, I'm sure that there will be more, and people will have the opportunity to attend as well. So that's from Brian. He's not here.
Thank you, Leslie. And I did have a chance to go and I at Lake Watch on Sunday, and I have never seen so many people at Lake Watch. By orders of magnitude, there were hundreds of people there, and I was told that the crowd had already thinned out by the time I got there. So it was a great outpouring of community support for the family.
Yeah, I know. I wish I could have been there, but I was out of town.
So we're going to roll right into Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, everybody's going on vacation in August. well, not everybody, just a few of us will be left. So we will not have a regular meeting. However, our subcommittee that's working on the diversity plan will be meeting and continuing to do our work. This has, it's always interesting little tidbits in the news this morning and actually through last week, just listening to some of the work that's being done for the new superintendent of schools. It raises, always raises for us, diversity and inclusion issue. And somewhere next to that was the report that's out now, another evaluation of where we are in terms of equity in education, with over 78% of nationwide, an average of over 78% of our white students graduating from high school, and just 47% of our black students graduating, a lot of it having to do with equity issues, and that's just the national average. In our individual communities, they are different. So just a little thought.
Thank you very much, Leslie. All right, we have no individual resolutions. We'll have one under unfinished business. But first, the minutes of the previous meeting, August 3rd. Do we have a motion on the minutes? Frank moves and Zer second. Pat seconds. I have a couple of changes, Dooley and then Pam. Go ahead, Dooley.
Oh, all right. Well, I was not at the meeting, so my changes have to do with clarification for my understanding of the minutes. And if you look at page one of the minutes, packet page 12, the first bullet under privilege at the floor from the Red Cross director, I believe it would be correct to insert the word average, shorten the average length of stay in the shelter by 4 days. So I'm suggesting the word average go in there.
Okay.
On page 4 of the minutes, packet page 15, at the bottom of the page, there's a report from the county administrator. The second sentence in that report says he has contacted local legislators. And I, from the sense of the paragraph, I think it means local state legislators. And Joe is nodding his head yes. The other thing in that same paragraph, if you go down 5 lines, the 2011 budget is targeted at a 5% levy increase with other reductions in spending, not in spending.
Reductions in spending?
Yes. I think that is probably what, yes. That's what seems to make sense to me anyway. And there was something on page 9. This is the first full paragraph from the bottom that begins Mr. Stein. And the sentence in the middle of the paragraph that begins the consortium, I want to make sure I understand what it means. The consortium wanted each municipality to provide proportionate amounts to the reserve, which would be $667,000. I assume that means that would be the proportionate share for the county. So the words "for the county," if those could go in, that would make it clearer. And then the next sentence, Mr. Squires has said the most the county could provide is $500,000 because there will be a lag between when the coverage begins and when claims are submitted. Additional funds would be in place. I think that's what that means. I'm giving you my suggested change. Am I interpreting it correctly?
Because there will be a lag between when the coverage begins.
And this says to claim submissions. And that didn't make sense to me. I think it means and when claims are submitted.
If Joe, that sounds right?
Yes.
If that's correct, I would offer that. And that's
and
all.
When claims are submitted. Pam?
I just had on page 14 of the packet, page 3 of the minutes, a comment that I made doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense the way it's written here, and I actually think it did make sense, much to everybody's surprise. Anyway, it's the next to last paragraph, and it's two sentences long. It starts with Ms. Mack, as he said, but it's the second sentence. Consistently, reductions and restructuring the Social Security system is done, as well as using funds. That isn't what I actually meant to say or said. What I would like to say is, raiding the Social Security fund for other purposes jeopardizes the fund and should not happen. Which is the intent of what I.
So basically, taking out that sentence.
Yeah, it's just so awkwardly phrased that I.
So
it doesn't make sense.
All right, raiding the Social Security.
Raiding the Social Security fund for other purposes jeopardizes the fund and should not happen.
Okay, Kathy, Michelle, you have.
I can give you that, Kathy. I'll just give you the.
Okay.
I told her that was coming.
Okay. Anyone else? I have a couple things on page 4, packet page 15. The second full paragraph at the from the top, I think it's unclear. It's worded incorrectly about the changes in the donut hole. Ms. Holmes said that it's not that there are discussions about eliminating the gap in coverage. Ms. Holmes said there are changes under federal health care reform that will begin to eliminate the gap in Medicare Part D coverage. So Ms. Holmes said there are changes under federal health care reform that will begin to eliminate the gap. And under Chair's report, the first paragraph there, the second sentence, she reported that the EPA will hold a day-long series of hearings on the effect of fracking on water resources on August 12th in Binghamton. And then I thought, since Sarah Hess's name wasn't previously noted, it should say Sarah Hess is arranging transportation. Kathy.
Thank you. On the page 3 and packet page 14, you'll see the third paragraph starts with Ms. Herrera. I'm suggesting a clarification to my words as reported. It sounds as though the swimmer started swimming at Cass Park. I'd like to suggest that it say swimmers will swim 1.2 miles and proceeds will benefit HospiCare. Also, in the next
sentence. I'm sorry, wait. So you're saying the second last sentence in that paragraph, swim, what should it say?
Instead of the word start at Cass Park,
okay.
I'm suggesting swimmers will swim 1.2 miles. And in the next sentence, the website, instead of having two S's in the middle, womenswimming.org, it should only have one, womenswimming.org. So if y'all would indulge me with those two changes, I would appreciate it. And I'll just say right now, for the record, due to my concerns regarding the habit of modifying minutes and resolutions outside of open meetings and possible unintended consequences related to this new revisionist practice, I will be voting no on these minutes. Tompkins County government has a responsibility to avoid the appearance of unethical behavior, particularly when dealing with contract awards, eminent domain, tax decisions, and other important decisions that are reported in our minutes. The habit of revising the wording of staff or other legislators has the potential for lapses, as well as perceived lapses in ethics and transparency. I oppose a revisionist interpretation of the legislature's minute-taking policy. This revisionist policy interpretation condones legislature actions that are not transparent and does not promote ethical behavior in Tompkins County government.
Jim, and then Frank.
A really simple question on my part. When is this going to stop, what we're doing here?
Well, I have a proposal, and it came out of discussion that Kathy and I had tonight. before the meeting. If you remember the memo that I put out there, the on this topic, the idea about bringing changes to the floor was so that all of us knew what we were voting on, and if you went to look at the final minutes that were accepted, there weren't changes that you hadn't seen. Previously, we would do all of these changes, I think, would have been under prior practice accepted as, you know, sort of non-substantive, but clarifying the intent or what somebody said. Or just making people, making the language more clear. So Kathy suggested that we have this conversation on the floor. Tonight, we agreed that we would like to try the following. If people have these kinds of changes, send them to Kathy, give them to her, or send them to her electronically by 5 o'clock the night before a legislature meeting. If there's a holiday, as long as it's there by beginning of work on Tuesday. She will provide in our red folders a version of the minutes with track changes so that we can see all the things that anybody has suggested be changed. And then you can see all those. You'll have time to look at those in your folder before we vote on the minutes. And people can ask questions of each other, but we don't have to do this kind of reading of things on the floor. Frank.
With all due respect to the statement that Kathy Lucerera read, as I'm not sure if I moved these minutes or seconded them, I would accept every one of the changes that have been suggested as friendly, and if that's okay with the rest of you, I'd like to call the question on the minutes.
All right, the question's been called. Let me just ask.
I had my hand up prior to Frank speaking, and I'd like to assert my privilege as a legislator to continue the discussion.
Who's the seconder of the minutes? Pat, you accept these changes as friendly?
I do.
All right, the question's been called. All in favor of ending
debate?
I'd like
to challenge the what is it I want to challenge? I want to challenge the ruling of the chair.
The question has been called.
This is undemocratic. I had my hand up before Frank spoke. And I think in the spirit of transparency and open discussion, there are allegations that you made and that I said I disagreed with that I would like to elaborate on, especially since we're having yet another interpretation of this policy.
I would point out that a question can be called at any time.
No,
there's no order.
Parliamentary procedure, point of parliamentary procedure, please.
Yes, Peter.
I would like to ask our attorney,
parliamentarian,
whether or not my recollection is correct that a person cannot make a speech and call a question at the same time. You have to be recognized, and that's all you're allowed to say to call a question. Is that not correct?
No, it can come.
Well, it's been pretty traditional. I don't know if it's really been a practice here. I guess it's not come up, to be honest. I mean, we've always, I've never known anyone to ask to call the question, and the question has not been called. But typically, like you say, it is just people just raise their hand to call the question. I could check in Robert's rules whether it has anything on, I mean, what you're asking is whether someone can call the question and also make speak on another subject.
I would point out if somebody else wants to call the question, that would be in order.
That certainly would be in order, yes.
Kathy? Just one second. I would point out that you did interrupt me while I was speaking, which was part of my issue here. What did you want to say?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say there's been a history of parliamentary procedures that have cut off discussion. And with regard to this particular subject, tonight is a very good example. There were changes made to the words that agency people spoke, people who weren't even here. The yet additional revision that is being suggested to policy tonight would have a printed copy be put in legislators' folders And yet, how would the agency directors, members of the public, and other people whose words are being changed be notified of the proposed changes in the public record to their words? In addition to that, tonight on the floor, I witnessed suggested changes to wording of staff that was conducted basically with a head nod by admission of one of the legislators. I believe that this sort of practice is not only unsavory, I believe it leads to the possibility, although it may not occur with any of us here, of very unethical procedures. And not only that, it loses the public's ability, the public's ability to trust what's going on with us. The notion that there's a bunch of minutiae going on here is very accurate, and the fact is that that's been going on behind the scenes is also very accurate. That it should be made public, I believe, is necessary. When we change the wording of other legislators, agencies, the members of the public, without their knowledge or consent or without public notice to what's going on, we've lost the basis of democracy. Please note what's going on here for our convenience, is it, or for the, shall I just say, that the accuracy, in my opinion, of the document is one that we have a responsibility to look after. And I understand that for many legislators, that's what's going on. However, people don't always speak in perfect King's English. In fact, as our tapes will show, we just say what's on our mind a lot of times, and the public is not a whole lot different. I believe that the actual record that's on the tape is more accurate than sometimes are rewording it, and that what we're falling into here is not just a slippery slope and a dangerous practice, it's revisionist. And yet again tonight, there's been a suggestion to revise an already revised policy that we have talked about discussing at government operations. In the minutes of government operations, you'll see that Paula Younger has agreed to talk with Mike Lane about this in discussions, and it was supposed to go according to schedule. And in the meantime, what's happening here is yet another revision. Please, let's act responsibly and do this the way at least some of us, I thought, agreed was a reasonable way to do it, instead of yet again coming to some urgent change on the floor and changing the policy.
I'm going to say something here, then Peter, then Carol. Kathy, I don't think you ever agreed to any of this, so it's not that many of us agreed. The Government Operations Subcommittee is still continuing to work on this. I will point out that the draft minutes are online and available in every forum to the public, and the final version, accepted version of the minutes are also online. So there is no actual or intended desire or effect of any kind of obfuscation or lack of transparency. I have asked, others have asked, what examples of staff intimidation have occurred or might occur. None have been given. There is no there. This is we are handling the minutes in a perfectly acceptable manner. And if not, then I would like to hear from other legislators. This is a democracy here, and 8 people, not one, decide how things happen. I have Peter and then Carol.
I move the previous question.
Which is the motion on the minutes.
Motion on the minutes.
So I need to ask Jonathan, does that require a second?
Yes. Well, is he moving
the... He's moving the previous question.
Yeah, that requires a second.
There's a second. Frank seconds that. And
I'm
sorry, I have to ask...
Clarification, I don't know what I'm voting on here.
Jonathan, is that so that we vote on the minutes?
Closing debate.
Yes. I mean, he's making the same motion Frank made.
He's calling the question.
Right. He's just using different terminology.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. All in favor of ending debate? That is, this motion is not debatable. In favor of ending debate on this question? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Opposed? 1, 2, 3. Then that carries. We are prepared to vote on the minutes that were, with the changes that were accepted by the mover and seconder. All in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. One, two, three. The minutes as amended. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12. Opposed? One. That passes.
Question. I did not have the opportunity. We never got to me, and I just want to make sure that it's okay with my colleagues that I already had called and changed my gender in the minutes. I was.
I don't know. There are so many things we could say about this.
I'm opposed to that.
We have Frank. I assume that I have your. That I was not something I needed to bring for the rest of you. So
thank you for the letter.
I will forego.
I assume that that's a correction.
That's correct.
That we can accept. We have one more resolution on the agenda. Pam, did you have something to say?
Well, I have a question because my. And certainly you can rule me out of order if I'm out of order. But my understanding has been that you issued a memo several months ago about the minutes. And you were offering your opinion on how that. But that was just your opinion. I mean, in my mind, I've been going on the assumption that we are approving the minutes the way that we set up the process in our rules, and so nothing has changed. Now we may want to change what we are doing, but I think that that as far as I'm concerned, we're operating under the rules that we had before. Just because the chair has an opinion on the way that we are proceeding, it doesn't make it happen. I just want to make sure that was the
policy. The policy on the minutes is not very prescriptive, doesn't give us any real guidance on how to handle the kinds of changes we've been talking about. So right. I looked at that.
But that's not the question. The question is that what your opinion was just your own opinion. It doesn't happen.
Let me finish explaining.
Okay. That
I looked at the policy. I looked at the 2005 report of the special committee that did talk about the minutes, and I realized that had not ever been accepted by the legislature, and the policy had never been rewritten given that 2005 report. So it was clear that it was committee work that had to happen, which also meant that was going to take some time. So working with Kathy, I put together that memo so that in the interim, because there was a lot of contention, there was a huge amount of staff time, a huge amount of staff a burden on staff in terms of corrections, et cetera, and revising resolutions at the last minute. Part of the memo was about resolutions that got revised after a committee had voted on a resolution. So I wanted to just kind of put a bookmark here, just say, okay, this is for the time being until GO can come back with a revision of the policy so we all understand how to do this.
And you have that power to do that? You can make that change in our without our having to vote on that? I didn't realize that was the case.
Well, essentially, it was simply kind of working with the clerk of the legislature.
Right, but I mean,
so these are the procedures that we're going to follow.
But you have that power to do that? I thought that the legislature had to vote on the procedures of the legislature. I didn't realize that you had that power.
I never was intending that it be a permanent.
Well, but I mean, even temporary. I was going on the assumption that you don't have that power, and now I it just appears that may not be the case.
Well,
is in my book, she doesn't.
If you'd like to propose something else, then send that to the GO committee. I suppose that would be the place that would go. Paula and Pat and Mike are working on that, and. That would be part of the discussion. Julie.
I think Pam is right. You probably do not have that power, but the fact that most of the suggestions, the practical suggestions, I think, came from our clerk, and I'm perfectly willing to try to work with whatever our clerk finds will make it a manageable task for the staff. So if it would be
if Pam would feel better that we actually vote up or down on what's being recommended, that's perfectly possible, too, by just making a motion at this meeting at this time. But I'm not sure that everybody has completely in mind what the new proposal is. So I would be willing to make a motion to put the most recent suggestion from Kathy into effect, that things be to her by a certain time, and see if it passes.
I'm not sure that that's appropriate. Kathy has set up procedures that work for her staff. We have not put those to a vote. She's always said that the resolutions have to be in a week before, that sort of thing.
But I'm talking about trying to resolve this instant discussion. That's all.
Carol?
This is a point of order. But I thought that we just moved to close debate on this and voted. I guess that any change in procedure I would like to see in writing, and I would like it to go to the committee that it got referred to. Whatever we're going to do, let's put it in writing and come back to us.
You moved to close debate and voted on the minutes. At the moment, there's no motion at all on the floor. People are just talking.
No. You don't say dumb thing.
There's some shocking news.
Wow.
I would be happy to put in writing what Kathy said today that would be acceptable to her. Dave, did you have your hand up?
Yes.
All right. I'm happy to put that in writing so that it's clear to people that to submit their changes to her electronically or in hard copy by the night before the legislature meeting, which is how we used to do it. Dave?
Okay. I'm just going to make a suggestion. I don't know if it's legal or not. Leave it up to our attorney to tell us. Why can't we just use the tape record, which is exactly what was said, and eliminate the issue?
Well, we don't have verbatim minutes, and never have. And if we want to vote, if the subcommittee goes to GO and says we should have verbatim minutes, then I guess that's what we'll do. And then we approve that policy, then I guess that's what we'll do. I would point out that this is not a matter of, and most of these that I saw in the minutes that we voted on today were not where what the person said was confusing or unclear, but the language that was written down by the minute taker was unclear. And we're the readers, we're the ones voting on the minutes. If it's unclear to us, and we were at the meeting, then helpful suggestions on what might be clearer, that's all we were doing. Peter?
I'd like to call a previous question and go on to the next item.
Okay. No questions to be called.
Trying to be transparent here. Kathy?
No, I called it.
There's no question.
There's no question.
The orders of the day is what I'm calling, if you want the right answer, is that I think this whole discussion, informal discussion that's going on, shouldn't be going on, and the motion in Roberts is orders of the day, which says that whatever discussion is going on is not the discussion that should be going on. So, unless we have a rule here that says we can have sort of informal conversation about anything we want at any time, but I didn't think that was the case.
We usually can.
Jonathan.
Well, that was kind of the point I was making. Peter is correct. There's nothing on the table. There's no motion. People are just talking. Under Robert's rules, you don't just talk. There has to be some motion or something that you're talking about, a report or a motion. At the moment, people are just talking, and I think Peter's right. It is out of order.
However, Martha did state she was going to issue something at the next meeting, and for myself, I'd like to comment on that.
I have a direction that I said I would take, and I think perhaps we could move ahead. We do have another resolution that's before we adjourn. So if people would just calm down, this is really not the most important stuff we have to deal with in our job here. And I'd like us to move on to the resolution that was tabled at the previous meeting, if that's okay with Frank.
Why would we do that?
Okay. Do you want to make the motion?
I'd like to move to lift from the table Resolution 122.
Dave seconds. You want to read the whole title, Frank?
Sure.
So people know what we're reading, what we're doing.
Urging the State of New York to resolve the issue of video lottery terminal operations at Aqueduct Racetrack to make prescribed statutory mandated payments to New York's Racing Association and to ensure that off-track betting honors its financial obligations to New York Racing Association. And I'd like to speak to this very quickly, Martha.
Well, first let's get it on the floor. So
oh, moved I thought it.
When you lift
it. And Dave seconds.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Frank.
When we last discussed this, there were some members of this body that had some questions that they wanted to go back and do some research on, and as was explained by Peter, it had nothing to do with me doing the research.
Frank, hold on. Before we talk about the content, we need to vote to lift it from the table.
I thought we did that.
No, we have a motion and a second. We didn't.
I beg your pardon.
Okay. All right. All in favor of lifting this from the table, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sorry.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Opposed? 1, 2. That passes. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay, now how will that be reflected in the minutes? Because I screwed up.
Okay,
I'm sorry. That was just some levity, Martha. Sorry. Sorry about that. Don't throw a cup at me, okay. The when we last discussed this, there was a concern that some of you raised that you wanted to go back and do some research on your own. Peter had that concern, and he wanted to follow up with the governor's office. And also, there were some newspaper articles that appeared in the New York Times. Will had a few that he referred to as well, and you both forwarded them to me for review. Since that time, now Peter and I have not spoken except by email, and it's been my fault that we haven't gotten together. It's not been possible, and I apologize. Since that time, though, I wanted to let you know that at this meeting I went to last Thursday with regard to agriculture in the state, at that meeting, it was reported that the head of the Senate, Assemblyman Silver, and the governor agreed to sign the contract that permitted the Malaysian firm, which was the successful bidder, to move ahead with the VLTs at Aqueduct. Subsequent to that, there was a report in the NYSAC News that Kathy usually distributes to all of us by email that highlighted the same thing. As of today, I cannot tell you whether they've actually signed the paperwork. I don't know the answer to that. Before this meeting, late yesterday and before this meeting, I called Albany to find out, and I have not had a call back, so I can't tell you that. What I'd like to do, of course, I'd love to have this voted on and have us support it, simply because some of us think it's worthwhile because of agriculture in the state. If you're not disposed or predisposed to do that, what I'd like to do, rather than retable it, I'd like to withdraw it, and that because it's a member-introduced resolution, we can do this, and I went over it with Jonathan before the meeting. And if indeed there's some reason why the signing doesn't take place, I can reintroduce it. What I'd like to believe happened is that, fearful of and cognizant of what Tompkins County's action was going to be, the three powers to be at the state level got so pensive that they decided we better come together and sign this. And if we accomplish even that, of course that's facetious, I'd love to believe that. Anyway, I'll be guided by what you folks want to do.
Anybody?
Would you like me to withdraw it?
I think that'd be
yes.
And then, but be prepared that I'd like I'm going to be prepared to reintroduce this if indeed I find out by the next meeting that it's not been signed. Okay?
I got Peter and then Pat.
Yeah, I would urge you to do that. It's my guess, having watched state politics, that your view of what your conjecture is in fact correct, and it was probably your action that prompted this to take place.
And that's not political, Peter.
Pat, I'd just like to say I appreciate the effort you put into assuring that we have all the information that's available at this time and thinking about the best way to proceed. And I, too, think that withdrawal is the way to go at this point.
Okay. Jim?
I would suggest you withdraw it, Frank, and also announce the fact that you're going to be going to work for the New York State Region Association.
And Jim is a member of the Tea Party organization. I have his business card here.
Thanks
for the understanding. I will withdraw the resolution at this time. Thanks a lot.
All right. Then I would like us to... I'm sorry. Leslin.
Chair, I just need people's indulgence to ask that the Public Art Commission resolution, that the clerk of the legislature please inform the Public Art Commission as well as the Downtown Ithaca Alliance of the results of this resolution. It's usually written into the resolution, and I realize it wasn't. Thank you.
All right. I'd like us to break for an executive session. Take a 5-minute break while they close the cameras down. Is that what you wanted, Pam?
Yeah, I was going to move, but we're going to the executive session.
Okay, and we will not be taking any action on coming out of that. So Pam's motion for an executive session. Is there a second? Will seconds. All in favor, executive session, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you. Back in 5 minutes.